Welcome to What is Going Om for new thought from the edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. According to the Talmud, a dream which is not interpreted is like a letter which is not read. According to Edgar Cayce, dreams are today's answers to tomorrow's questions. And according to someone I once knew, dreams are love letters from the soul. I should imagine there are as many explanations for dreams as there are, well, dreamers. They're one of those intriguing mysteries that humanity has been trying to solve since the beginning of time. We all dream, even if we don't remember our dreams, and no one has been able to come up with a convincing answer as to why we do it. But personally, I like the explanation proffered by Professor of Psychiatry and one of the world's leading authorities on sleep medicine, the late William Charles Dement, who claimed that dreaming permits each and every one of us to be quietly and safely insane every night of our lives. This week, I'm joined by psychologist, shaman, and author Serge Kahili King, whose latest book, Dreaming Techniques, Working with Night Dreams, Daydreams, and Liminal, explores techniques to help us harness the power of dreams for healing, transformation, and changing our experience of reality. Serge Kahili King, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, you've been studying dreams for over 50 years. What is it about dreams that captivated you so?
Well, one of the things is the similarity to waking life. In the dream world, we have memory, we have different kinds of thinking, we have all the sensations that we have in waking life, and although some of the physical rules seem to be very different, but it seems to me not only that, but here we have this time of amazing adventures and sometimes very dull ones, but it takes up about a third of our life. And that seems to me to be important enough to go into more.
That's interesting. I mean, there are lots of reports that we are dreaming much more during this pandemic. And I think it's interesting the correlation that you're making about, our lives, our daily lives. People's daily lives have been changed so much during this pandemic that I'm not surprised that people are dreaming more. Are you?
Well, I don't think we're dreaming more. I think people are remembering their dreams more. That's what I see from it.
Why do you think
that is? Because we're
dreaming
all the time. We have multiple dreams every night. Most people don't remember most of them, and some people don't remember any of them. But if we're in a situation now that creates an awful lot of stress, and I think that allows people to remember more.
Interesting. Well, your new book, Dreaming Techniques, goes way beyond the average dream book. And it's some of the way beyond material that I want to focus on tonight. The techniques you share for harnessing the transformative power of dreams and the information you have on how dreams are understood in neuroscience, psychology, and in different cultures, and your exploration of daydreams, visions, and remote viewing, and the power of liminal dreams. So, where should we start? Let's look at some of the studies around dreams. I mean, there's different attitudes, neuroscience, psychology, various different, arenas have invested a lot of time studying dreams. So tell us a little bit about some of the different views of dreams.
I'm sorry, what was the last?
Well, you were talking, in your book, you talk about how various different, arenas, neuroscience, for example, psychologists. They've all been studying dreams, and yet nobody has yet come up with an answer.
Well, there are lots of answers. That's the thing, because there are so many different ideas. And we're talking about a state of consciousness in which nothing can be absolutely proven. So what we can do is experiment. We can try different techniques. We can do some things that produce a kind of a consistent experience. But when we come to actually defining it absolutely, we can't even do that in regular science.
Well, in the shamanistic world, and certainly in a lot of indigenous cultures, great meaning is placed on the interpretations of dreams.
Oh, sure. In the shamanic tradition, which I follow, but dreams are real experiences. They have all the they have all the qualities of external experiences, and they just take us to places. In the shamanic world, we think of them as actual places that we go and visit, sometimes spontaneously, but as a shaman, you learn how to do it on purpose.
There are so many different types of dreams. One of the things I found interesting in your book was when you were talking about environmentally influenced dreams. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, of course, where we live and the conditions under which we live and the memories of the places in which we sleep all have an influence. And if we want to include sometimes the things we eat have an influence. The energetic nature of our surroundings has an influence. But it has an influence on our daily life as well.
You had an experience when you were in Germany that was very interesting, when you had what you call an extremely vivid, out-of-place dream of a mafia hit team. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, that's what it seemed like. That's what the whole thing. I was dreaming it from a third-person point of view, as I was an observer, and it just seemed like that kind of a thing. Now, at that time, I was also doing a lot of research into memory itself, and the idea that different objects can retain memory. Like people are familiar with going to a place like Gettysburg and hearing and seeing, or at least gaining a sense of the battles that took place there. So memories can be in our environment too, and that's what I think happened to me in that experience in Germany.
Yeah, you said that you're convinced that objects have memories of the energetic things that happen around them. I mean, do you think this is why some people, they talk about ghosts at certain places, or people are able to do, read, pick up energy from an object?
Yes.
Is it the same thing?
I think it is the same thing, yes. Ghosts are more complicated, because they can be emanations of memory, sure, but they can also be thought forms of people existing now.
Excuse me.
Hello.
I need you to keep talking because something's happened to my throat.
Okay.
Excuse me one moment. Okay, so let me talk about how we can organize things so that we remember our dreams better. You've talked about changing our patterns, creating descriptions of our dreams, even using crystals. So say a little bit about that. How can we, if we're somebody who doesn't remember our dreams very well, create a situation
the best
where we can.
Way, and all the great dreamers have done this, the best way is to keep a journal. If you really are interested in understanding your dreams more, you want to keep a journal. And one of the ways to do that is have a pad of paper and a pen by your bedside. Now, when I was starting to get deeply into this research, why I began keeping this journal, and I trained myself to wake up every time I had a dream, and I found out that I was having, half a dozen or more dreams every night that I could remember well enough to write down. And so one of the curious things was I might have a nightmare, and then I might have about 6 or 7 dreams that had nothing to do with that. So that made me think that nightmares were not nearly as bad or as important as they seemed. But doing a journal is if you're really serious about it, because then you can look it over and analyze it and discover things both about dreaming and about yourself.
What about crystals and changing the direction of your
crystals,
bed?
How crystals do they are help? Very, crystals are good because they're an environmental influence, and because they give off a field of energy that can stimulate dreaming. So putting a crystal under your pillow, for instance, for many people, that will help to stimulate dreaming.
Any particular kind?
Stimulate the remembering of dreams, I should say.
Any particular kind of crystal?
No, it depends on the, I've experimented with a lot of different ones. There's not a great deal of difference in the energy of the crystals, but I like quartz and I like lapis lazuli. That's kind of like a favorite of mine, and it works for me. So you might want to experiment if this interests you.
Why would changing the direction of your bed make a difference?
What's that? Why would what?
Changing the direction of your bed. Position
that makes a difference. There's another environmental influence, yes. We may be able to, besides the health aspects, we may be able to influence our dream recall by orienting ourselves to the magnetic north and south.
And have you actually tried that?
Oh, yes, right. It works for me and others that I've worked with.
I'll have to try that one. You say that you are particularly tempted by the idea of parallel interpretation. What do
yes.
you mean by that?
Well, it's the idea. See, now this is following my tradition, which not only shamanic, but there's a deep Hawaiian aspect of it as well, in which everything is now. And if everything is now and we are having all these other experiences, then it seems that they might be experiences of worlds or states of experience that are happening at the same moment. And we shift over into these in the dreaming state, whether that's a daydream or another kind.
So we're really in a parallel dimension.
That's a way of thinking of it, yes. It's nothing that can be absolutely proven, but there are so many aspects of it that seem to make sense that's what I use.
You wrote about audio, having experiences of people hearing sounds or hearing other voices speaking to them.
Yes.
I think we've all experienced that. I mean, I've often found myself woken up because I hear somebody calling my name.
Yes, right. It happens to me,
but there
too.
There was a very interesting experience that I noted a few weeks ago. I had my 95-year-old mum staying with me, recovering from a very minor stroke. And she started singing in the middle of the night, and she was asleep. And when I asked her the next day why she was singing, she told me that she heard her sister's voice. And her sister is dead, but her sister used to sing with the Salvation Army. And so she was singing along with her sister. And then she revealed that she often hears singing when she's awake as well. And
that's
so
right.
She joins in with it. What do you make of that?
Well, most often now, the origin or source of this is still something to research. But I find that most often this occurs in what I call the B state, or hypnagogic, or in-between state between waking and sleeping. This is where this experience happens most often. And I get not only voices, sometimes speaking to me, sometimes not. All kinds of sounds happen occasionally, different kinds of knocks. Sounds so real when I'm in that state that I have sometimes get up and look around, but there isn't anything there. So I'm tuning into my way of thinking about it is that I'm tuning into something that's happening outside the normal range of our senses.
Hmm. So, yeah, okay. So you could be tapping into a parallel reality of some kind.
There, yes. Yeah. That's, I like that explanation.
Yeah, I like that explanation too. Certainly in that, in my mum's case, you know, she was very happy in that reality.
Right, good.
So we're going to go to break now. We'll be back in a few moments. So you're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with psychologist, shaman, and author Serge Kahili King about his latest book, Dreaming Techniques, Working with Night Dreams, Daydreams, and Liminal Dreams, which offers techniques to harness the power of dreams for healing, transformation, and changing our experience of reality. We'll be back with more from Serge Kahili King in a few moments.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression. They're human conditions. And no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited. From brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked, the Podcast, will explore them all, including the notion that, for many, breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked, the Podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America. 200 food banks strong.
Welcome back. Serge Kahili King in Dreaming Techniques. You said, The following sentence is the most important thing you have to say about dreams and dreaming in that book. And the sentence was, after a dream is over, it becomes a memory. Why is that the most important thing?
It's most important because the dream itself is over. And this is particularly important when we're talking about nightmares. Often people who have nightmares, one of the treatments is to have them go to sleep and slowly teach them to be able to take some action in the dream at night while they're asleep. And my experience is that that's a big waste of time, because it's like any experience. The dream is an experience. It's over. What you have left is a memory. Now, because it's a memory, anyone has the ability to change the memory on purpose, and this has amazingly beneficial results, especially in terms of a nightmare. Most nightmares are dreams of helplessness. So what you do is, and I give several ways of doing this in the book, but what you do is take that memory consciously while you're awake, eyes open or closed, it's up to you, you pick a point in that memory and change the story. You change your reaction, you change what happens, even if you allow the dream to continue beyond your memory, it will always resolve itself in a positive way, but that might take a while. But you can consciously just change it, and this changes the effect of that dream on you and your body and your mind right now. And it only takes a very short time to do.
There are certain dreams or states while one is asleep.
Having a hard time to hear you.
Sorry. There are certain dreams or states, you know, when one thinks one is asleep, where I forget what they call them, but people almost become awake but feel paralyzed. And they
right.
feel that there is something happening to them, but they can't do anything about it. What about those kinds of dreams? You know, what's causing those?
Well, here's the thing again. During the dream, that can be the experience. After you wake up, it's a memory. So you go back and change the story so that you're not crushed, so that you're not helpless. And that has amazing effects on you.
What about daydreaming? I mean, you have a whole section on daydreaming, and you're quite right in that you say daydreaming is something that many people ignore because they think it's inconsequential or even not helpful. But in fact, you point out many ways where daydreaming is tremendously helpful.
That's right. It's when we begin daydreaming, I think that the master daydreamers are fiction writers. Because while they are conscious and awake, they are creating with a daydream these amazing stories, some of them so well done, especially in the field of what's called science fiction or fantasy, so well detailed that it seems like they were actually in an actual place and that the things that they're talking about actually happened. That's how good their daydreaming is. But there are so many ways, as I mentioned in the book, inventors and not only authors, but actors and filmmakers and everybody, inventors, they daydream in order to bring something into reality, this reality.
You did the same thing, didn't you, with the novel that you wrote?
Oh, sure, of course. I have several novels that I've written.
Do you consciously, you know, say, do you set it up for yourself? Do you set an intention that you're just going to, you know, sit aside and do some daydreaming with the intention?
Well, I don't think of it in as daydreaming, but I have an intention to produce an experience. Okay, it is a daydream, but nevertheless, I have an intention. What really is exciting about that, and I know other authors experience it, is that once you set the intention, other stuff starts to come in as kind of like inspirations, sometimes from the characters you create themselves. I've had the experience of new characters wanting to intrude their way into a book, and they are so interesting. It's almost as if they are contacting me, and I write down what they are doing and what their experience is. The writing of fiction is a really tremendously creative and exciting adventure for me.
I think, you know, it's not uncommon to hear writers say that the book, there was a point at which the book started writing itself, and they were surprised by some of the things that actually, you know, ended up on paper.
That's right. That's right. I have had, in one book, Dangerous Journeys, I had two characters that came in with full-blown backgrounds. I didn't have to do any research.
Yeah, that's like channeling, isn't it? You know, just letting it come through you. What about things like, I mean, you cover thought forms and tulpas, and these are things that, you know, people have created. I mean, I've read a lot about tulpas in the past, but that we could actually deliberately create a healing thought form. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. This can be very good. I can recall one time when I was ill and had a kind of a very strong flu-like illness. And I'm lying in bed trying to figure out what I can do. So I created a team of scientists from the future. This was my daydream, but my eyes were open. I imagined them sitting on the bed, directing a healing machine toward my chest. I did this in great detail so I could feel the weight of the machine and the sounds and the people around. I made all this up. But like I said, things filled themselves in as well. And in about an hour, I was completely well.
You know, I do know people who have done that. I know someone who had lymphoma, and she was an actress, and she marshaled a team in her mind of some of the actors that she knew that were strong and powerful, and they became, you know, like her team moving around her body, removing the cancer.
Yes. We are capable, all of us, of amazing things.
So what do you think we're tapping into there?
I'm sorry, what?
What do you think we're tapping into when we do that?
Oh, I'm not sure we're tapping into. We are using our mind and our energy to focus and generate an experience. Now, because there are other things that come in on their own, I think by doing that, we are tapping into something greater than this particular reality that we're so obsessed with.
Well, but it's one thing to say that you are going to create this team for yourself. I mean, you write about Napoleon Hill, who had an imaginary group of counsellors.
Yes.
And then you say, but he thought it was one of his best techniques, but he abandoned it when the counsellors seemed to become too independent. So
yes,
that sounds like they're almost becoming tulpas. He's giving life to those forms.
In a way, yes, right. Even the story of the woman who created the tulpa in Tibet, she created this thought form of a monk that some people could see and hear. So this is something that different people have written about and done over the years, but it's done more often. Children are very good at doing it.
Oh, the imaginary friends, yes, yes.
Not only imaginary friends, but I'm not sure how many kids do it today, but I can remember when I was a child why we had played cowboys and Indians, and we had, without any of the physical things, we had sticks for rifles and pistols, and we jumped around. We could feel the horses under us, and we had that. We played war because it was wartime. And we had all these experiences. Now, more recently, I can remember I saw a cartoon that showed this beautifully. It was from a cartoon called Family Circus. And one of the little boys was sitting in a box, a cardboard box. And the girl came up, I think it was his sister, came up and said, oh, what a nice boat. And the boy got upset, and he said, this is not a boat. Can't you tell it's an F-86 jet plane? For him, yeah. With his fantasizing, it was not all in his mind. That's how he had transformed his immediate environment.
It's interesting when you think about kids today whose toys, you know, are everything is created for them. You know, not like in the old days where a stick could become anything, but you give them a cardboard box and they seem to prefer it. So it's like we're almost predisposed to want to use our imagination rather than just have a toy put in front of us that,
sure, that's right.
You know, is complete.
One of the most enjoyable experiences I had was when my children were in high school. And I became, I'm not if you've ever heard of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, yes.
This is before it became a video game. This was when it was a kind of like a table game, and it was all imagination. And I was a dungeon master for about 5 years for a group of children from the neighborhood. Oh, we had such amazing adventures, and I got into it because I heard my children at the table one night talking about something they had done that day, not something that they had seen and not something that they had read. They talked about it as if they had actually done it. And that's what intrigued me and got me into that. And it's a form of creating, it's a way of creating thought forms and alternate experiences. And all we had was pencil and paper.
Mm, yeah. You know, I think the in-between state is much more... much richer and more fun than dreaming and being asleep.
Yeah, because we can have more influence on it.
Yes, yeah. I loved the things that you wrote in there about the impossible disappearances and reappearances, mirages, etc. I mean, we've all had experiences of things that we know we put down in a certain place and suddenly they're not there.
Oh,
and
that's
then,
right.
Yeah, they may come back later or they may not.
Right. Well, that gets into the, well, we start getting into the flexible nature of this reality that's around us. We get in the habit of looking at it in a particular way and tend to overlook or ignore or explain away all the anomalies that don't fit the way things are supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes think that, you know, these things are occurring and it's probably so much easier for us to dismiss it as a dream or not accept that actually we have a power that we're not really aware of.
Yes. Yeah, I have in various books a lot of experiences that techniques that I teach people mostly for healing, but that are all about changing the immediate reality with intention and energy, and wow, the things that can happen, illnesses, problems, cuts, bruises, even broken bones can be healed immediately with the right kind of concentration.
Well, you've got a great technique, actually, that's designed to prevent problems like scrapes, cuts, bruises, and broken bones. Tell us about that.
Well, this one is called, I have various names for it. The simple name is the repetition technique. But I also call it the mind blower technique because it shouldn't work, but it does. And it has to do, well, let's take a simple experience, a very simple one. Of stubbing your toe. If you stub your toe, and then what you would do in this experience is to stop, make the same motion of your foot toward the thing you stubbed it against without touching it, and do that over and over, and it helps the concentration if you will say, nothing happened, nothing happened, nothing happened. And if you do that, it doesn't take very long, the pain will disappear and there'll be no trace of the experience as an injury. And this is done, this can be done with all kinds of things, burns and cuts and many different things. Hitting your thumb with a hammer, you repeat the experience without the ending. You've changed the ending. Right now, here and now, in this open waking life, and your body changes its reaction into the present moment in which nothing happened.
Yeah, and you also have a really cool one where you give people the vision of still spikes growing out of their feet or attached to the soles of their shoes when they're on slippery ground.
I'm sorry, you're fading out.
You have a really good technique that you offer to people of still spikes growing out of their feet. Tell us about that one.
Oh, yes, right. This is excellent for hiking, especially down steep or gravel slopes. And what you do is use your imagination to that there are still spikes coming out of your feet, and so that when you put your foot down, you have a firm grip. Now, of course, you're making this up. There isn't any real still spike, but it changes the way you walk and the way you step and gives you a firmer sense of connection and makes the walking easier and safer. You can do similar things. For instance, I used to get seasick, I stopped doing it when I imagined cables connecting my waist to the bottom of the water, whatever I was on, and gave me a sense of stability, no matter how the boat was rocking, and so went away with seasickness, so I never get seasick anymore.
We really do have access to so much more than we think we do.
Yes.
We do indeed, yeah. Well, we're going to go to another break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is psychologist, shaman, author, and teacher, Serge Kahili King. And we're talking about his book, Dreaming Techniques. We'll be back with more after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Time's flagship radio show, What Is Going On. As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable. Your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who've walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done, they don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Serge Kahili King, you cover awakened visions, mirages, in-between state stuff that shouldn't happen by any interpretation of physics. And you say that these anomalies really do point out the dreamlike quality of the world around us. Share some of those with us.
Well, there are so many simple experiences that people tend to ignore, but that happen so often. I think briefly you mentioned before putting your keys down one place, mm-hmm. and then they're not there, and then you come back and they either are there or you find them someplace else. This happens. And it happens to an awful lot of people who are aware of it. I've had experiences where I have dropped something and heard it hit the floor, and it's no longer there, anywhere to be found. And things that have come back after, sometimes very quickly, sometimes after a long period of time, and yet seemingly, impossibly, they reappear. Unfortunately, this doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes things don't appear when I wish they really would have. But I have the idea that if we think of energy and everything as energy, and that energy is really a system of waves, then just like we see in the ocean sometimes, we can see waves that connect together from different places and times and either cancel each other out or produce a very big wave, a rogue wave, they could call it, in the ocean. Which, now, if this is the way waves work, then in a way it can make sense that even the physical objects that we think of as solid are really, we know they're really not. And if they are waveforms, then it's possible that in certain cases, waves that we see as physically solid can cancel each other out and or increase and can produce the same kinds of experiences in our regular daily reality, that things stop being there and may or may not return, or that suddenly there are things that weren't there before, or that something is there now and has changed in some dramatic way.
Well, you've had experiences, I mean, many, many experiences, judging from the book, but mirages. I mean, you've seen things, and somebody has been with you and seen the same thing that 5 minutes later is not there. You talk, yes, about an experience you had in London when you were in, I think, Regent's Park, was it not? Where you and your companion both saw these white domes that don't exist,
yes,
there.
It's like we were temporarily walking across a bridge in a park, and we temporarily, it's like we stepped into an alternate reality, mm, because looking down the river, there was nobody, there had been people with us on the bridge. Now there was nobody on the bridge but us. And we looked down the river and saw this these gleaming white domes on the side of the river, like it was a different kind of city. And it lasted for about 5 minutes, and then we came back to what was normally there.
Yeah, and there are many stories of people, whole groups of people, who've seen things in the sky that shouldn't be there. You know, phantom battles, armies,
oh, sure.
all kinds of
things.
Done
that too. And there was a group of people. It was back in the 1800s, but it was reported a group of Hawaiians went to a particular place on the island of Kauai that had legends about a village that appeared and disappeared. And they stayed there overnight, and they reported, I think there were, can't remember the exact number of people, but there was this large group of people who reported exactly, every one of them, that they saw this village appear and people walking in it, and then it disappeared.
I mean, the last five chapters of your book, I mean, you cover a wide range of topics of how dreamlike our daily experience really is. And
yes.
I think you say that you believe life is a dream.
Yes, I do. It's especially if you'll, in the book, I talk in detail about how our senses work, which most people don't think about very much, but that we don't experience anything directly. There is no objective world. I mean, this is scientifically known, okay? So we're not seeing what we think we see.
Well, we hear this all the time, don't we, when people have different stories about the same event.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've experienced that. I was had to be in a jury one time, and it was really quite something to hear all the different versions of what happened.
So are we dreams ourselves?
Are we dreaming what?
Are we dreams ourselves?
Oh, I think we are. And that's one of the reasons why, using some of these techniques that I give, not so much about the healing in that book, but in others, how we can dramatically change our health.
Yes. Yeah, now there's the important part there. I mean, right there is how much of our life that we can change for the better.
That's right.
So say a bit more about that.
Well, we experience the effects of our intentions, of our state of energy, of our expectations, of how we react to memories. All of these things influence the way we see life and what we see and our relationships, not only with the environment, but with other people. And these are the things that we can, by making changes in the things that I mentioned that we are capable of changing, we can change our experiences. Now, it's not like we can say, you know, wave a magic wand and have everything all nice and good and fuzzy. But some things take some time, but we can make dramatic changes, like I said, with intention. It's like I will tell people, one of the phrases that we use is to expect the best. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to get everything you want, because there are a lot of other energies out there around you. But it does mean that if you expect the best, you're going to more likely to get something good. And it will be the best possible. And you'll be open to opportunities. Whereas if you are taking the perception of expecting the worst, that's what you're going to see, that's what you're going to interpret. And although some people call it attracting, it's just that you are helping to generate it and see the bad things rather than the good. And that is going to affect all aspects of your life.
So I can understand that, what we can do for ourselves, but you say that we can also influence the behavior of people, things, and nature. How so?
We can influence that behavior, yes, of course. This is where the distant healing work, which we have a group of people who do that, can help to strengthen the tendencies toward better health, better state of being, better circumstances. We can help each other to do that. And it's an influence. There are a lot of energies and influences in this world around us. In the shamanic way, we think of everything as alive, aware, and responsive. So I'll give you one simple experience. If you will compliment your car, just, you know, take some time or do it on a regular basis and thank the car as if it were alive for being what it is and doing what it does. Sometimes the car will have to break down simply because a part is old enough or needs repair, but it will always do it conveniently. So, well, over and over we've had this happen where, like, either a flat tire or a battery go out, but it'll happen in a place that's very convenient for it to be fixed. One time I was in, I don't know if I wrote about this, but in a bus with a group of people in Mexico, and the bus was, it was at night, late at night, the bus developed a problem with one tire that it looked like it was about to blow. So everybody on the bus sang love songs to the bus. And they were hoping to heal the tire. Well, that was a bit too much. But what happened was, this was a big 100-mile stretch at night. The bus finally, the tire blew, the bus rumbled to a stop. Right in front of the only restaurant, it was a pizza place, and the only garage on the entire road. So that's what I mean when we can have an influence on the things even around us.
Well, I have certainly experienced over and over again when things have gone wrong with my car, it has always been incredibly convenient, but I never had the intention for that. I just noticed it after the event.
Well, maybe you just love your car.
Maybe, maybe. Of all the things that you have experienced, researched, seen, and heard about, what is the thing that surprises, excites, or fascinates you the most?
Because I'm always having new experiences. I'm always having new experiences out here in this outer world or waking life. And one of the most fascinating things in terms of dreams, I'm always having new dreams, new people, new situations, new places. And I've been doing this since the 70s, paying close attention to my dreams. And yet, it's not like I get a lot of repetitive things like I'm reading a book over and over again. These are all new experiences. And new experiences happen out in this actual life. Some of them, sometimes we lost a home to lava. And we had a rather small place, but it was a beautiful little place. And with many other people, we lost our home. And that led to us being able, with our insurance worked out, to buy a beautiful place near the ocean in a different area. And so we have this wonderful, much larger place to live in. And everything turned out perfectly.
So you must go through life in almost like a magical way with everything unfolding,
well,
just as you choose it to.
Yes. Well, I don't choose everything that happens, but I take advantage of everything that happens, and I bless it and compliment it and thank it so that I get more of it.
Well, I can't argue with that. Serge Kahili King, thank you for joining us today. I really enjoyed your book.
Oh, thank you, and I've enjoyed being here.
So, Serge Kahili King, and the book is Dreaming Techniques, Working with Night Dreams, Daydreams, and Liminal Dreams. It's published by Bear & Company. You can learn more about Serge Kahili King, his work, books, and events at his website, sergeking.com. And you can also find out more information about HUNA International, the non-profit worldwide network of individuals that he's established who have dedicated themselves to making the world a better place. That's www.huna.net. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and the No BS Spiritual Book Club at sedgbeer.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me.